AK. I know it's been a while, but I'm still alive. So I recently finished my summer class. So now I'm just pretty much chilling until school starts back up. I think it starts August 23rd or something like that. But anyway, so it's been, I think, over a month since I've updated you guys on stuff. I had a whole bunch of stuff that I wanted to say. I feel like I didn't do an update because I had so much to say that it was overwhelming. So now that time has passed, I'm not really wanting to go into detail about a lot of this stuff, especially stuff that's been in the news. Like Black Lives Matter, George Floyd, you know, how President Trump is handling the situations and whatnot. So, Juneteenth was June 19th. That was a holiday that a lot of Black people are going to now celebrate instead of the 4th of July. The holiday has a misconception. It did not mark the end of slavery. That was with the 13th Amendment that was ratified December 6th, 1865. So June 19th, 1865 is when the slaves in Galveston, Texas found out that the Emancipation Proclamation freed them. So it was local to that area. And then as slavery ended and the freed people moved throughout different parts of the country, they took their Juneteenth celebration with them. And it just kind of, you know, became a big thing, a big holiday among Black people celebrating their independence. So, I mean, the real day we should celebrate would be December 6th, which would be great because my birthday is December 7th. So that was Juneteenth. And a lot of Black people weren't aware of the holiday. Most, from what I read on Facebook and Twitter and different social media platforms, that a lot of people were not aware of the holiday. Some people had heard of it, they didn't know what it was. So a lot of people got to learn and watch YouTube videos. I posted some stuff on my personal Facebook page, you know, to help educate people. As a history teacher, of course, I already knew about it. And so I think that's a good thing for people to want to get involved with and celebrate. One thing that I was seeing on the 4th of July is people using Frederick Douglass's speech, What to the Slave is the 4th of July? And they were quoting his speech, and basically it's a really long speech, and he gives it to an anti-slavery society in New York. And he did it on July 5th on purpose because Black slaves and freed celebrated July 4th on July 5th. So his whole point in giving that speech was to basically call out people on their hypocrisy. So of course the audience was, you know, mostly white women. And so the first half of the speech, he is basically just tearing into, you know, the founding fathers, the hypocrisy with Christianity and slavery, just really going in on these people. And when people quote his speech as an excuse or, you know, a justification not to celebrate the 4th of July, they don't read the rest of the speech. Because if you'd read the rest of the speech, you would see that he basically says, you know, I have no ill will towards this country. I believe in it. I have hope. I believe in the Constitution. I believe in the Declaration of Independence. These men were great men. They were flawed, but they were still great men. So it's like, if you read his whole speech, it would make you want to celebrate the 4th of July more. I mean, at least I think so. But the common misconception nowadays is that if you're not like a blind loyalist to the country, then you're unpatriotic and you hate America. So as you saw, if you look at his speech, Frederick Douglass did the exact opposite. He called out the country's faults, but he also said, you know, I love this country. I have hope in it. I want to see it get better. So anybody out there who uses Frederick Douglass's speech not to celebrate 4th of July, please read the rest of it and see that, you know, the second half was very patriotic and, you know, that kind of thing. He loves America. Another thing that people don't know is in 1875, he gave another speech, this time mostly to a black audience. So, of course, 1875 was after the Civil War, right around Reconstruction time. And it's called The Color Question. And it's one of his lesser known speeches. But basically, he kind of answers his own question. In the first speech, it was, what to the slave is the 4th of July? So in this speech, he says, you know, what does the colored man have to do with the 4th of July? And his answer is basically everything. And he talks about how black people have fought in every single war for the United States since the beginning, when it was the 13 colonies. That black people have been there. You know, they weren't even treated as equal or people or whatever, but they still fought for the country. They helped build the country. And so for him, when he's giving this speech, it's very different than the previous one. And I think that's because he gave that one before the Civil War. So slavery was still, you know, a thing. It was still legal. So after the Civil War and after the end of slavery, he's able to kind of see the dramatic change in American society. And I feel like he was able to think more about how black people have affected the founding of the country. I mean, himself included. So that was something else that I posted on my personal Facebook page. I posted a Facebook note thing, because as a history teacher, whenever I see things that are inaccurate or something that I know a lot about, I feel like I have to address it. Whether or not somebody reads it is irrelevant. It's just the fact that I want to put it out there and I want people to know that this is what really happened type of thing. So again, please don't use Frederick Douglass as a way to justify not celebrating the 4th of July, because he's right. I mean, black people had a lot to do with the country getting its independence. And the thing is, a lot of people don't know that in Thomas Jefferson's draft of the Declaration of Independence, he included a paragraph that included slavery. Because if you read the Declaration, it talks about grievances against the king and why they're declaring independence. And he put a paragraph in there about slavery. And of course, that got taken out because most of the signers were from the South, whether or not they were slave owners or, you know, sympathizers or whatever. So that definitely had to come out. I think it was South Carolina and Georgia that said that if it didn't come out, they would side with the British, which is pretty hardcore. But that came out because they felt that if that was in there, that would mean that the blacks were free. The slaves would be freed if that remained in the Declaration. So it's like Thomas Jefferson, you know, did try to free the slaves. It's very interesting because he seemed to be like somewhat of an abolitionist, even though he had his own slaves. Granted, he did inherit a lot of them from his wife, but he still had slaves. So it would have been interesting to see if that paragraph had stayed in there. And when the colonies were independent, the slaves became freed, how that would have affected Thomas Jefferson. I mean, I think he had over 200. So it would have been very interesting to see what he would have done. I don't know, but I mean, they made him take it out. So, and that's the part that's kind of weird, because the draft, of course, they went through and, you know, picked and chose what they wanted to keep. And so they kept the first paragraph about all men being created equal, which would make sense if the paragraph about slavery had been left in there. But since it's gone, it doesn't make sense. And it seems really hypocritical. Like, how dare he say all men are created equal when there's still slavery? Well, in his original draft, he had that paragraph in there. So again, that's something. So I know a lot of black people, they feel some type of way about celebrating the 4th of July because black people were still slaves. Everybody knows that. Black people were still slaves. So it's like, how can I celebrate Independence Day when my people were still slaves? And my thing to that is, well, yes, Black people were slaves, but like Frederick Douglass said, Black people still fought in every war. They fought in the war for independence. They fought in that war. Some chose to side with the British. Some chose to side with the colonists. They fought in it. I mean, there was a double agent. His name was James Armistead Lafayette. And he was a slave. And he was a double agent. He was basically finding out stuff from the British and then going to tell George Washington and his men, you know, their plans or whatever to kind of help win the war. So I kind of feel like, as a Black person, hear me out, if you don't celebrate the 4th of July, I kind of feel like it's a slap in the face to the ancestors. Let me say that again. As a Black person, I feel like if you don't celebrate the 4th of July, that's a slap in the face to the ancestors. I'm letting that sink in because it's a really, really controversial statement. Let me explain. So, again, it's no secret that slavery existed in the United States, as it did everywhere else around the world, but we're talking about the U.S. specifically, that slavery was a thing. Now, if you read anything about the history of slaves in the early founding years of the country, the slaves knew that they were not going to be free. But like Frederick Douglass, they had hope for a better country, for a better society. So the sacrifices that they made, you know, their lives, it was to hopefully ensure that their ancestors would have a better life. Because they knew they weren't going to be free. Like, they knew it's not going to happen. You know, but the fact that they still celebrated the 4th of July, just did it on July 5th, but they knew they weren't going to be free. So it's like, if they fought and sacrificed their lives for the hope of freedom, fast forward 244 years later, I feel like if you could like bring them back from the dead, they'd be like, what do you mean you're not celebrating the 4th of July? Are you kidding me? All the sacrifices that we gave for you to have this moment, you know, you guys aren't slaves anymore. You're able to, you know, live alongside the white man. You're able to have jobs and opportunities, etc. What do you mean you're not celebrating the 4th of July? Now, this is just my own personal opinion. I don't know if they'd really feel like that or not, but I kind of feel like that's just my opinion, that it's kind of a slap in the face because, you know, while they were slaves, they did have a hand in winning wars and building the country. I mean, so it's like for a Black person not to celebrate the 4th of July, it's like, I mean, you're an American, first of all. You can do whatever you want. You want to celebrate it, you don't need to justify it. You're an American. That's literally why you want to celebrate it. Go for it. Or some people celebrate it in the sense of honoring their Black ancestors that were part of the struggle for independence. Because they knew that if they helped the white man get independence, eventually independence would come for them. Now, they knew they wouldn't see it in their lifetime. But they, again, had hope that it would happen at some point, which it did. So it's kind of like the same thing with the civil rights movement, how for Black people not to vote, it's like a slap in the face to the ancestors because there were people that sacrificed their lives, died for them to have the right to vote. So it's like they're probably turning over in their graves. A Black person's like, I'm not going to go vote for president. Like, what do you mean? Or not even just vote for president. Like, local elections matter more than the general election or the national election, because those directly affect us. Like, in my town, if I go vote for my representative for the Indiana State Congress, that affects me way more than whoever's president. So I feel like if they don't vote, it's kind of like these people sacrificed their lives, you know, endured all these hardships, all this stuff that they had to go through for you to vote, and you're not going to utilize that privilege, you know? So it just... Again, this is just my own opinion. You know, you can take it as is or tell me, you know, hey, AK, you're wrong. But I think that's kind of how I look at it. I think it's a different way of looking at the celebrations. But, I mean, that's just me. Anyway, so what else did I want to talk about? I kind of jotted some stuff down. Black Lives Matter.
Yes, Black Lives Matter, we know. For me, I've never fully been able to get behind the movement. I'm not saying Black Lives don't matter, because of course they do, but I mean the actual movement. Mainly because I feel like it's pointless. Hear me out. Black Lives Matter movement is pointless. Because what is it accomplishing? Now, granted, Antifa did kind of hijack it and started doing their own thing. So now it looks like the BLM protesters are the rioters burning stuff up and tearing stuff down. Even though for the majority, it's not them. It's Antifa and the other, you know, left-wing groups. But when it first became a thing, I understood that it was trying to bring awareness of police brutality or inequality among Black Americans. But again, what is it accomplishing? What is it set out to do? In order for us to have change in this country, it has to happen legally. We know from history that we can't have just a social change. It has to go through the courts, because social means nothing if it's not legal. The end of slavery, an amendment to the Constitution, the Civil Rights Act, legal documents that had to be signed into law by a president. So Black Lives Matter, while it might mean well, it's not really accomplishing anything. Unless I'm wrong, and unless there have been lawyers and politicians that have been working together with the organization to draft legislation to present in front of Congress. I don't know if that's happening or not. I think I would see it. It'd be a big deal if it was happening, because with this platform, with this movement, it's so powerful right now that a lot of stuff could get done. People are donating money. People are putting in time and effort. They could have drafted thousands of pieces of legislation to go present in front of Congress, you know, addressing police brutality or the restructuring of the police force, poverty, whatever they wanted. They could have done, they can still do it. It's not too late. So I feel like in the sense of making real change, political, legal change, I don't think the organization is doing that. I mean, I don't know if that's what it was intended to do. I was reading about it on the website because people were saying about how it was a Marxist organization and they were going to tear down the structure of the family and all this kind of stuff. And I was reading it, and it is troubling. I mean, basically, some of the things they were saying was they wanted to, I'm not looking at it right now, so I'm paraphrasing, don't quote me, but it was something like they wanted to get rid of the traditional westernized nuclear family. So mom, dad, 2.5 kids, you know, dog, white picket fence, house. They wanted to get rid of that, and they wanted to replace it with the concept of it takes a village, which is prominent in other cultures, other societies, where they don't have that nuclear family structure. It's more of, you know, everybody's, the mom, dad, cousins, aunts, uncles, neighbors, friends, everybody together collectively helps to raise the generation. So, I mean, I guess I could see why people would say that, but some people were saying they felt like that it was glorifying single mothers, because the nuclear family includes a dad. And if you're a single mom, there is no dad. So people felt like using the village analogy was because there was no dad, which I think is totally weird. I mean, again, I don't know. I'm not in these people's heads. I don't know what they mean when they write these things. So, and then I saw about, they were talking about gay and trans Black lives and just other things going on. I'd recommend go to the Black Lives Matter page and read the About Us or whatever section it's under. Basically, when I was reading it, I didn't really remember it focusing too much on the original issue, which was police brutality. And of course, there's the argument that Black lives only matter when white people kill them. Because, you know, Blacks kill each other every day at alarming rates. You know, I mean, so do whites, Hispanics, Asians. Again, I'm sticking with Black people right now. At alarming rates. So it's like, you know, the stuff that happened, it was like some kids got killed or something. You know, where was Black Lives Matter when that happened? That type of thing. So I do feel like the organization is problematic. I think it means well, but in the sense of again, getting legal change in Congress, you know, people reading proposals in front of committees of Congress, that it's not occurring. And I feel like that it does have potential. And the whole, you know, it takes a village and the nuclear family structure and all these other things on their website, that's all fine and good, but don't get distracted from what your original mission was. So it's just like, I don't know. I just can't get behind it, because I feel like it's a waste of time, to be honest. I mean, yes, we do need social awareness about all these issues. Of course we do. But at the end of the day, social awareness does not make change. Change happens legally. People aren't just going to wake up one day and think, oh yeah, Black lives do matter. Oh yeah, gay people do matter. Oh yeah, trans people do matter. Oh yeah, everybody matters. They're not going to wake up one day and think that, which is why we have a government, why our government is set up the way it is, because you can't force people to change socially. It has to be legally. Like integration, for instance. You know, integration happened in different parts of the country, mainly the South, though. The Southerners weren't going to wake up one day and think, oh yeah, my white kid should go to school with the Black kid. No, they weren't going to think that. So what happened? The federal government stepped in and said, hey, your white kid has to go to school with the Black kid. Now, of course, then you have the whole white flight creating the suburbs, there's still segregation, you know, whatever. But my point is that the people weren't going to change their mindset. And even today, there's people that probably still haven't changed their mindset, but it was a legal change and there's nothing they can do about it legally, unless they can try to like overturn the court case for whatever reason. So it's like, while you would think that people are inherently good and they want these things, to be honest, they're not. People are not inherently good. They're out for their own self-interest, their own self-gain, and don't really care about anybody else. Generally speaking. So the social change is great, but we need that political, legal change to really make these things stick and make these changes happen. Like, for instance, we've got all these companies that are capitalizing on Black Lives Matter right now, and it's kind of offensive, actually, you know, because again, there's no legal change happening. I mean, you have all these companies, you know, on their little websites saying Black Lives Matter, or they're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook posts, you know, making YouTube videos, whatever they're doing, solidarity with Black people, all this kind of stuff, and it's like they're capitalizing on it because, let's face it, capitalism is what our economy is. It's a capitalist economy. It's all about money. So whether or not you actually believe it, you know, you can make money off of it. And also the fact that you don't want to lose people because you're not supporting it. So I feel like it's a bandwagon thing. And it's like the whole Aunt Jemima thing, you know, I think that brand's been around for 80 something years. It's been a while. It's been around for a while that they are changing the name and taking the woman off the box and everything because of the racial stereotype. And I actually had to educate people on Facebook. I didn't know that people didn't know. People were upset. This is Black, white, you know, Hispanic, Asian. They were upset because it was happening and they didn't understand how it was racist. They're like, how is it racist? It's a woman on a pancake box, you know, she's got on a pearl necklace, you know, she looks, you know, fine, her name's Jemima, whatever. But I had to, you know, post a video that showed that the creation of the Aunt Jemima character came from a minstrel show where it was, you know, white men dressed in blackface, and the character was Aunt Jemima. So it was a white man dressed in blackface, basically being a slave mammy, you know, cooking for the white man type person. And that was the idea behind it. And then Nancy Green, the first Aunt Jemima, they found her and kind of just made it around her. So, and of course, you know, she was a slave, so that really fit their narrative too, that she was a slave. But I feel like the issue with that whole thing is that where they got the name. Like, where they actually got the name, because over time, I mean, look up the YouTube videos and look at the ads and stuff. Just horrible racist. Just look at it. It's like insane that even existed. But over time, you know, they took off the slave clothes, they took off the mammy, you know, the bandana and all that kind of stuff. Now she looks like a loving, you know, black grandmother or whatever. And her name's Aunt Jemima. So over the last 100 years or so, they've really changed the narrative of the brand. So people didn't know this. They're like, what? Really? That happened? How do you know that? I'm like, really? I'm a history person. Of course I know that. So some people didn't understand and they were upset about it. But they're talking about like PC culture or whatever, trying to take everything good away, all this kind of stuff. It's just a name. So when people understood that, they looked at it a little differently. Now for me, how I feel about it is Malcolm X, he told us in 1965. I think the speech was 65. Yeah, I think it was. One of them. Can't remember. He did so many speeches. But basically, Malcolm X was a very smart man. And he talked about liberals and conservatives. Basically, his whole point was that they're both white and they both hate black people. But his point was the conservatives will be straight up with you. They will be straight up, but the liberals won't. The liberals will pretend to be your friend and pretend to give you what you want, give you just enough to where you're comfortable and you'll just shut up and let it go. Just enough. They're not really looking out for you, but just enough for you to be like, okay, yeah, they're on our side. And then that's it. Nothing else happens. And who would have thought that his words would ring true over 50 years later? Because the way I feel about the whole Aunt Jemima syrup thing is exactly that. Black Lives Matter. You know, the whole police brutality against people of color, all these other things that are happening, Black Lives Matter. So we're supposed to be excited about Aunt Jemima pancake and syrup mix being taken away? Do you see Malcolm's point? That Black Lives Matter, we want change. We want social and legal, political change for how blacks are treated in this country. And one of the responses is, oh, we'll take Aunt Jemima off the shelf. So a lot of black people are excited about that. But from what I've read, a lot of black people are like, really? Leave Aunt Jemima alone. You know, we like having a black woman on our syrup box or syrup bottle, you know, pancake box, whatever. But it makes me think about Malcolm X that it's a distraction. We need to keep the main thing the main thing. So for instance, the Washington Redskins, apparently they announced today that they are going to change their name. Now, this has been a thing for a while that I was reading about different Native American groups that have wanted this name change to be, you know, years ago, because it's a racial slur, really. I mean, Redskins, really? Like these Native American stereotypes that different sports have, like their mascots, their team names or whatever. And I was also reading that some Native Americans are like, okay, why do I care about Redskins? Are you kidding me? All this other stuff that's going on in our community, why would I care about Redskins? So it's kind of, you know, kind of like split in that regard. But again, I kind of feel like it's a distraction. Again, Black Lives Matter, social, political, legal change. No more Aunt Jemima, no more Washington Redskins. What does that have to do with the original mission? So I can't remember the name of the speech. I really can't. I mean, you could Google it on, or search it on YouTube. I mean, it's there. All of his speeches are there. But just hearing it, and it might have been one of the interviews he gave too, but just hearing him say these things and then seeing what's happening, you know, for 50 years later, it's just really eerie. And it's like, there's some people that are seeing through this foolishness, through this nonsense. They're like, hey, you guys are trying to distract us from what we really want. We really want police reform. You know, we want the police and the community to rebuild their relationship, restructure whatever it is. But instead, you're throwing at us a new name for the Washington Redskins and a new name or whatever for Aunt Jemima. Like, that's not what we want. It's like, okay, cool, that's great, this is happening, but that's not what we want. And I feel like people shouldn't get distracted by this because that's what they want. Let's face it. Let's be honest. If the establishment had wanted this to happen, it would have happened already. They don't want this political, legal change to happen. It's going to shake up the status quo. So instead, like Malcolm told us, they give us distractions. Things that are good, that they perceive good, that we perceive are good. And they're just good enough to get us to think, oh, wow, some real change is happening. Okay, cool. Black Lives Matter is really doing something. Awesome. When in reality, where's the legislation that Congress signed or that Congress passed and President Trump signed? Where is this bill? Where is this bill addressing every single grievance that the Black Lives Matter movement or other communities in this fight have? Where is it? And it's like, keep your Aunt Jemima. Keep your Washington Redskins. We want legal and political change. Now, some people might argue and say, you know, AK, I agree with you somewhat, but we need the social change too. Which I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm not saying it's wrong to have that social change, but I feel like that's a distraction from what's really happening. And it made me think about, you know, like the Confederate statues and stuff. Now, granted, a lot of those statues went up actually during the Civil Rights Movement as kind of an F you to black people, you know, stay in your place and that type of thing. So, but the ones that didn't, the ones that were already there, you know, the after the war or whatever, I don't remember, you know, I mean, I'm not in my 60s, so I don't remember people really freaking out hardcore about those statues. I mean, people that are older, if you listen, you know, tell me if you remember that. I mean, from what I've been, you know, reading, researching, I don't remember people really freaking out about those Confederate statues. The ones, even as they were going up. Because I feel like, yeah, that was horrible that was happening, but that wasn't the main thing. The main thing was equality, racial equality, integration. That was the goal. Nobody cared about statues. Even if they did, the statues weren't going to make or break their cause. A statue of Jefferson Davis going up does not influence or affect them in the sense of, oh, we have to stop trying to pursue this legal change because Jefferson Davis is now a statue. Like, nobody cared. And I feel like the statues, same thing. I feel like these statues are a distraction. You know, like, is it good that Confederate, you know, statues and monuments are coming down that are glorifying these people, X, Y, and Z? Of course it is. But is that our focus? Is that the goal? No. Nobody cares about these statues. These statues are not the issue. It's not like tearing down and defacing a statue is going to all of a sudden end police brutality. If it would, all these statues would be gone. So again, it's a distraction. You know, defacing a statue, tearing it down, pulling it down, whatever you're doing to it, that doesn't address the issues at hand. And plus, I feel like it's really disrespectful, too, from what I was watching and whatnot reading, the way people were doing these statues. I'm like, look, I understand you want to take them down, but you don't need to spray paint them and topple them over. Like, you don't have to do all that. I mean, you know, there's a way that it can be done. You know, while it is history of our country, and I feel like it should be respected in the sense that it's history. So I feel like it is disrespectful to do that. I understand the anger and frustration from people. I totally get it. But these statues, I think they should be preserved in a museum. And it's kind of hard to do that if you spray painted it and, you know, knocked it off and torn it up or whatever. And then some people are just getting crazy. Like, I was reading that apparently a Frederick Douglass statue was knocked down. Like, are you kidding me? So some people get a little crazy with the statue thing. But no, I feel like, yeah, Confederacy, you know, they lost, you know, the Union won, whatever. But I feel like, here's my thing. I'm a conspiracy theorist somewhat. And I was thinking about this, and I was thinking, hear me out. So I kind of feel like, if you guys know anything about Abraham Lincoln and Andrew Johnson, not a good match. This was when the president and the vice president was who won and who got runner-up. They didn't get to choose their VP. So Johnson was from a slave-owning family in the South. So total Southern sympathizer. So I kind of feel like Johnson had Lincoln assassinated because then he would be president, right? that he had him assassinated because with the war ending, Lincoln had a plan in place on how to reintegrate the South to the Union. And Johnson didn't like it because, again, that's where his family's from, that's where his people's from, that's where he's from. He didn't like it. So with Lincoln being out of the picture, he can do whatever he wants to be able to, you know, get the South back in. It could go easy on him or, you know, whatever. So I feel like if Lincoln hadn't been assassinated, this whole Confederacy stuff would have been squashed. Lincoln never acknowledged the sovereignty of the Confederacy. He always called them states in rebellion. So I feel like if Lincoln had lived after the war, he would have made sure everything Confederacy related was gone. No statues. Statues wouldn't have come up. Flags would have been burned. Flags wouldn't have been reproduced. He would have made sure that the Confederacy was erased in the sense of it's not something, you know, 150 years later, people are still screaming about and waving flags around. I feel like he would have handled that. I don't think he would have been opposed to creating statues, you know, having monuments in a museum or something like remembrance, but I don't think he would have been down with, oh yeah, you guys can keep your flag and keep your statues and glorify, you know, your leaders who were traitors and losers, literally. So I kind of feel like if he had lived, that wouldn't have been a thing. I feel like the Confederate flag wouldn't be a thing if Lincoln had lived. None of this would be a thing. Because I don't know what there is to be proud of. First of all, it only existed for like 5 years, but the fact that basically these states left the Union because they were mad that Lincoln wanted to end slavery, like, that's nothing to be proud of. I don't understand how you can be proud of that. I mean, I'm from Indiana. I mean, I've been here most of my life, but my family is from the South. But I just don't understand how you can, but again, I'm not in the South. I wasn't raised in the South. I wasn't, I guess, like indoctrinated, so to speak. I just don't understand how you could be proud of something like that. And for the people who are listening and saying, oh no, it's about states' rights to own slaves. Yes, you're right. It was about states' rights to own slaves. Yes, it was. Read the secession documents from almost all the states that left. Almost every single one of them says something about preserving slavery, the Negro race, the colored man being inferior, all of them say something like that. Because if that wasn't the problem, then why would they have left? Why would the South feel threatened by Lincoln and his election? Lincoln ran on a platform and he wanted to end slavery. Like, that wasn't a secret. So if none of this had to do with slavery, why would they leave? Why would they even feel threatened about Lincoln? Like, there's no other way that you can say, oh, economy and everything. You can say that, but at the end of the day, it all comes back to slavery. So let's just be real with that. So again, if Lincoln had lived, none of this stuff would have existed. And it's very interesting. It makes me laugh whenever I see like these big old Ford pickup trucks. They have these gigantic flags waving in the back of their, in the bed of the truck. One's a Confederate flag and one's an American flag. And I'm like, do you realize the irony in that? Like, you're celebrating treason and traitors, people who left the country because they were mad that they wanted to take their slaves away from them. And they created this bogus country and a war was fought and they lost and it dissolved. Why are you waving that flag? To be honest, you could compare it to like waving the American flag and the British flag. That's literally what you can compare it to. Like, there was a war between what would be the United States and the British Empire. The United States won, the British Empire's influence dissolved in the country because they lost, so we wave our American flag. So if you wave both flags, isn't that problematic? That might not be a good example, but whatever, it's the first thing that came to mind. So, I mean, I don't get it. Again, I wasn't raised in the South, I just don't understand, and I don't know how they teach the Civil War down there. I think they teach it like the War of Northern Aggression, you know, it's the North's fault, and they try to water down slavery. I don't know. I just feel like it's very problematic. Now, I know there are some people who really believe in Southern heritage, Southern pride, but my thing is, why are you proud of that? I don't understand why you're proud of that, but okay, whatever. Anyway, it didn't even last that long anyway. It's not even, it shouldn't even be a thing, but again, I think it was a conspiracy with Johnson and having Lincoln assassinated. So that's just my thought on that. But so again, back to my whole point with this social change happening, again, it's not affecting legal change. Now, I keep saying this over and over. If I'm wrong, please let me know. But from what I've been reading and looking for, I haven't seen anything that has addressed the issues in the Black Lives Matter movement that have been going before Congress. I don't mean like your senator or your representative. I mean actual Congress, like going to DC before Congress. Because with the money being donated, the people that are involved in this movement, this could have happened yesterday. Like the NFL donating, like it was like $250 million to Black Lives Matter. What are they donating the money to? And it's like, first of all, where's this money going? I mean, who's keeping track of this money? Where is it going? How's it being spent? But not only that, but the influence that the NFL has, instead of donating $250 million, they could use their influence in the organization to create legislation. All those owners, all those teams, everybody could come together and draft legislation. They could work with the Black Lives Matter groups. They could work with other groups, lawyers. They could create legislation to take to Congress and read it, present it, and say, this is what we want. Here, take it, pass it among your fellow Congress people, and, you know, have at it, duke it out. But instead, it's like throwing money at the problem isn't going to make it go away. All the money in the world is not going to change the issue at hand. It can't happen through social change. It can't happen through money. It has to happen legally. If we could do it that way, we wouldn't need a government. The government is here to protect your rights as a citizen of its country. So as an American, that's why the government is here, to protect your rights. So everyone has a right to not be killed by the police. So shouldn't there be something in legislation, a court case, a law, or something that should address this across the board? Because there's thousands of police departments across the country. You know, we all know that there's a lot of people. So shouldn't there be some blanket law that addresses whatever issue that you guys have with the police? I don't know. I mean, can somebody explain to me why? I feel like, again, like Malcolm X said, the distraction. That this is, it's all great, all the NFL, Washington Redskins, no more Aunt Jemima, you know, money being donated, Black Lives Matter, you know, these statues are coming down. That's all fine and good, but what about what actually matters? What about the political, legal change that people are trying to make happen? Where is that at? I mean, the election's coming up in November. You know, these people that are doing protests and speaking out against brutality and whatnot, they could be campaigning to run for office. And then they could really make a change if they were a legislator in Congress. They could run for office in whoever is in their district and be a member of the House of Representatives. And they could even introduce a bill in Congress about addressing these issues. But I'm not seeing that happen. And it's very sad because, again, if people actually did this, we could have made this change happen yesterday. All the stuff that people are demanding would have been done already. And this is why it's important to be involved in your government. The Founding Fathers knew that. If you want to be represented, to be heard, you have to get involved in your government. Marching through the streets and screaming Black Lives Matter is great, but what does that do? What does that actually do? And the answer is nothing. Just something to think about. Okay, so now it's getting all deep and serious. Okay, the next topic, let's see, what did I write down? I've kind of been going all over the place. So President Trump, now when the whole coronavirus stuff first happened, and back in, what was it, like February, March, like early March, his approval ratings were the highest that they'd ever been. It was still like 40-something percent, but it was still the highest it had ever been. Mainly because people felt like, before they really got to know information, they felt like, okay, the president was dealt this, you know, crazy blow, this virus, and he's handling this really well. you know, we're appreciative of his leadership type of thing. Like, a lot of people were saying that. And then as time went on, they realized, okay, no, this is not right. And he just kept saying and doing stuff. And it's just like, no, never mind. His approval rating went back down. With the George Floyd incident, when it happened, I felt like this is the perfect time for President Trump to be presidential. Whether or not he believes it was irrelevant, but this is the perfect time he could be presidential. He could unite the country. He could speak out against police brutality. He could acknowledge that it exists. You know, he could say a prayer for George Floyd, his family. He could, you know, be sympathetic. All the things that he could have done. Again, it wouldn't have been genuine. Let's face it. We know it wouldn't have been genuine, but it still would have been great to see. Then I think his approval rating would have skyrocketed, because not just black people are upset about it, which is why stuff's actually happening, social change at least, because white people are mad too. And we know when white people get mad, things get done. So I think his approval rating would have went up through with black voters, white, I don't, everybody would have, his approval rating would have went up. Now I know he has done some things, some like little things, signed little laws or whatever, but I feel like if he could have, this was the perfect opportunity for him to be like, look, I'm the president of the United States of America, all Americans, I stand with you in solidarity. You know, I'm going to address police brutality. We're going to, you know, invest in body cams for all police departments. We're going to try to bridge the gap with the police and the communities, rebuild the trust, rebuild the relationship. I mean, all these things he could have done. But what did he do? He went to Twitter and made it worse. He made it worse. He divided it even more. He made it worse. And it's like, really, bro, this was your perfect opportunity. Because you know your approval ratings are in the toilet, mainly because of coronavirus and the way you're handling that and the way that your people are trying to silence and shut down Dr. Fauci. Like, really? But so this George Floyd, this would have been a perfect opportunity for him to embrace the presidentialness that he's supposed to have as the unifier, as the leader of the country. But he didn't. And, you know, 2 months ago, if you were to ask me, did Biden have a chance against Trump? I would have laughed in your face and told you no. But now, fast forward 2 months, and I think that Biden has a really good shot at winning the election, which is crazy. And it's literally Trump's fault, though, because he had two opportunities to show presidential leadership, the way he handled coronavirus and the way he handled the protests around the country. Instead of like apparently threatening to send people to jail for 10 years for defacing a statue or whatever, he had two opportunities that he could have used, you know, his charm or whatever you want to call it, to be presidential. And that would have guaranteed his reelection. Again, whether it was true or not, let's face it, all politicians are liars, mainly because they're human. You know, we all lie, we're all people. They're all liars and they all have a facade. They say and do what people want, whether or not they personally believe it. And that's what they do. And that's what Trump should have done. He should have done that. But he didn't. And so now Biden actually stands a chance. And I'm just like, wow, I would have never thought that Biden stood a chance, you know? But, and then the whole mask thing, apparently yesterday, I think, was the first day since this whole pandemic started that Trump was seen wearing a mask. I'm like, dude, okay. But no, so with Biden, you know, and Trump, he called it, I think, does he call it the silent majority? Isn't that a Nixon term? I don't know. I think he calls it the silent majority, his people who support him, but they're afraid to say they're Trump supporters or whatever. But I was reading interviews and watching interviews. A lot of these people are like, you know, I've never voted Democrat in my life, but come November, I'm voting for Biden. Like, that's how upset people, like lifelong Republicans are so upset with Trump and his handling of the protests and the coronavirus, they're actually going to switch parties for the first time like ever. Like 40, 50, like these are older people, 40, 50 years in voting. They've never voted Democrat and now they're going to do it. Like, he's losing his fan base and it's like he's floundering. And it's like, instead of trying to appeal to the people, again, he's making it worse. And it's like, dude, you have to understand that the people that supported you in 2016, they're not supporting you anymore. A lot of people are upset because the promises that he made to them. Because a lot of the people that voted for him were like middle America, farmers, working class people who were seeing their jobs go overseas, you know, just things, the everyday person that they were seeing things happen. And Trump, you know, preached and promised and declared all these things that he would do for them. So of course they're going to vote for him. And what happened? Like, nothing. So people are upset about like, hey, I voted for you. I gave you a chance. You know, they felt like Trump was out for... People didn't like Hillary because, well, for numerous reasons, but because, you know, she was corrupt and she was a part of the establishment and this, and Trump was new. He wasn't a politician. You know, he wasn't well-spoken or polished or whatever. He seemed like a regular person. He could relate to people and that type of thing. So I'm going to vote for him. I'm going to give him a shot, do something different. But they failed to realize that while Trump isn't a politician, he's still a businessman, a capitalist businessman. So while you might think he can relate to you, I don't know how you would think that. I mean, he literally grew up with he was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. I don't know how you could think that. Made his money off of real estate, working with his dad. I mean, he's a billionaire. So it's like when people want to talk crap about Hillary, at least Hillary had the humble beginnings, you know? So it's like, I don't know how people thought that Trump, or why they thought he would do that for them. I mean, just, I don't know. But he didn't. Basically, he didn't. So people are upset about it because he didn't. But now the two major issues in the country that have been going on for the past couple months, or 4 or 5 months, I don't know what month it is, it's been the social protests and the coronavirus. So with Biden having a chance now, the issue is if Biden does win, what's he going to do? How is he going to do it? But as somebody pointed out yesterday, it was one of the podcasters, they were saying that if Biden wins the election, November to January are going to be the worst months of the entire Trump presidency. They're not wrong, though. They're not wrong. He would blame it on, you know, rigged voting or whatever he would blame it on for him if he lost. But my thing is, all the election being rigged and all that, it's like, were him and his supporters saying anything when he lost the popular vote by 3 million? So, like, literally the people did not elect him president. Was he saying that about the election being rigged and unfair? I mean, it was in his favor. So if it happens for Biden, they're already throwing out that narrative. Oh, well, they're going to cheat. They're going to have illegal immigrants vote. The Democrats are going to sabotage the election. There's going to be voter fraud, all this kind of crap. So if Biden does win, the Trump administration would be like, see, we told you. We told you the Democrats were going to do that. We told you they're going to do it. They're going to steal the election. And this is how they did it. So, but with Biden is what? Is he 78 yet? So, I know he might be 70. I don't know. But he's old. He will be the oldest president because Trump is the oldest right now. So, I mean, I'm not trying to be rude or anything, but the odds of Biden actually surviving 4 years in office, I think would be very, very slim. So I think Biden's shot, I'm not the only one that feels this way, trust me, I've read. I think that his shot at winning the election really depends on who he picks as his VP. I think that's because if Biden dies in office, the VP will be president. It's kind of like John McCain. John McCain wasn't almost 80, though, when he had Sarah Palin, but it was like, if John McCain died in office, who would be president? And it was Sarah Palin. I feel like if he hadn't had Sarah Palin, he would have won. If he hadn't had her as VP, he would have won. But anyway, so Biden has a choice to make. And of course, we're all like chomping at the bit to find out what his choice is, because he's said publicly numerous times that it will be a woman of color, a black woman or whatever. We know it's going to be a woman. And it definitely can't be an old white woman. So we know it's going to be a woman. So the thing is, he needs to really, really vet people. Because I've read about people who are on his short list. And one thing that's going on is Tammy Duckworth. Oh my gosh, I love her. She's a senator from Illinois. And when she was running, I was like, if I lived in Illinois, I would vote for you. So quick background, she is an Iraq war vet. She was flying Black Hawks. And one of her helicopter got hit by an RPG and literally like blew off her legs, so she has no legs, and I think she lost mobility in one of her arms. And she actually stayed in. She stayed in the military. And so she's, you know, a decorated war veteran, and she is on the short list for VP, which would be great. I mean, she's a woman. She's a minority because she's Asian. Is she Thai? I think her mom's from Thailand. I think her dad is white. Whatever, she's Asian. She's Asian and she's a war vet. So I think she would be the perfect VP. But the issue is that she was not born in the United States. But because her father was a citizen, he was an American, I'm not sure how that would work. Because I know with John McCain not being born here, you know, his parents were citizens. He was also born in the Panama Canal Zone, which was American owned or whatever at the time. I don't remember the background story of Tammy's birth. But I'm not sure, because people were freaking out about Obama being Kenyan and he wasn't eligible. But I'm like, I guess it does say natural born citizen. So I'm like, if both of your parents are American, does it matter? I mean, I don't know. So but my point is, if she's VP and Biden dies, would she be able to become president because of that? I mean, she wouldn't have been elected into office, but she wouldn't have met the qualification of being a natural born citizen. So for me, that's my only issue with him choosing her, that we got to figure out if that happens, or if he's deemed, you know, not fit, suitable, whatever, for office, and she has to take over. Will she be allowed to do that? Is that constitutional? And I think that'll have to be like a Supreme Court case, because that would be unprecedented. I think it would be. I'm not really sure. I don't know if any VP, like recently, like past the 1800s, has been born outside of the United States. Or, I don't know. So for me, that would be my only thing with her being VP, because if he's found not fit or he dies, you know, traditionally, Amendment 25 to the Constitution, the order of succession, the VP takes over. So would they skip her and go to the Speaker of the House? I don't know. That's something we got to figure out. Because if that's the case, then the Speaker of the House is who matters. And if that's still Nancy Pelosi, that makes it even worse. Oh my gosh, I don't know. So that's something that needs to be, and I don't know if anybody's actually thought about that. I don't know if the Biden campaign has thought about that, but she is one that is on the short list. So, but apparently I was looking at when Hillary announced Tim Kaine as her VP, because we're all interested in knowing when it'll happen. And I think she announced, if I remember correctly, she announced it at the DNC. Now, because of coronavirus, the DNC is usually, both conventions are usually in June, I think. But this year, they're going to be in August, like next month, in August, late August. So that means that, I don't know if that's tradition or not, to reveal your VP then. I'm not really sure. I don't really pay attention that much, to be honest, like when they do it. But, if that's the case, you know, we do have a while to wait. So I feel like Biden and his make or break is going to depend on his VP. Now, it also depends on if Trump does something else that's just so awful that causes him to lose more supporters. There's always that as well. But I think that It will really come down to who his VP is, because I'm not the only person thinking that. I know I'm not the only person thinking that. So, I don't know. So, Biden's gotta, you know, he's gotta let us know. So, that'll be very interesting to see how that works out. But, I don't know. Let's see. What else do I have to talk about? I've been talking for almost an hour. I knew I was going to talk long. I wasn't going to try to bother with, you know, stopping and doing every 15 minutes. That's just doing too much. I mean, I'm not sure how Anchor works, or if you're listening to this on another platform, if you're able to like pause it, come back to it, or you can just write down where you left off at. I don't know. So let's see. I think that was actually it. I'm trying to think, because I wrote this stuff down the other day. Something happened recently, important to talk about. Oh, one thing is the whole Kanye West thing running for president. Like, I don't understand what's happening with that. I thought he was supposed to run in 2024. I don't know if it's real or what. Because, I mean, him and his wife are, you know, friendly with Trump, his family, the administration. So I don't know why he would run against him. So I don't know if that's legit or not. But, I mean, people were laughing at the idea of Kanye being president and Kim, you know, being famous for a sex tape scandal and all her stuff being first lady. That was laughable. And I'm like, look at who we have in the White House right now. A man that no one took seriously, not a politician, no political background, and his wife, who was a nude model, who was so what makes the two of them different than the two of them? I don't know. So the whole Kanye thing, I mean, when I first saw that, I was like, is he being serious right now? But from what I was reading, that if he is serious, he's already passed the deadline for like, I think 6 or 7 states to be able to be put on the ballot. And Indiana's one of them. So I'm like, I feel like if it's true, if this is legit and he does end up on the ballot, that Trump's gonna win, because people who vote for Kanye are basically voting for Trump, because there's no way he's gonna win. So it's like a vote, any vote that's not Biden would be for Trump, in a sense. I mean, maybe that's his strategy. I don't know. I don't know if it's real or not. I don't really know. I just saw it the other day, and I'm just kind of looking at the story like, what? So I don't know. We'll see. But I think that November 2020, it's going to be a very, very interesting election. And I know that the administration is also concerned about losing Congress. Because people aren't just upset with the president, they're upset with the Republican Party in general, because they refuse to call out the president and his foolishness. They're keeping quiet, knowing that this stuff is a bunch of nonsense. So of course people they represent, their constituents, are like, are you kidding me? You're not going to say anything about that? We elected you to speak out for us. We elect you because we believe blah blah blah. You know, you're not going to say anything? Okay, good. Guess what? You're out November. So I think that that's a real possibility too, that even if Trump wins the election, that I think that the Republicans are going to lose the Senate. I mean, they've already lost the House, but I think that they'll lose the Senate. Because it's senators that are, you know, doing Republican senators. So I feel like, I mean, I don't know. It could be that it's all Democrat. We get Biden in office, the House remains Dem, Senate becomes Dem. Or it could be nothing changes, where Trump wins, the House is still Dem, Senate's still Rep. So I don't know, but it's very interesting, because Trump has had this loyal, silent majority fan base since the beginning, when he first started his campaign. But if he's losing those people, who is he going to rely on to vote for him? And I was watching the whole Hispanic initiative thing he was trying to do. Really, bro? I didn't watch the whole, I just watched bits and pieces of it. I'm like, oh, Trump's on TV. And I'm looking like, what? I'm like, he's just really trying hard. Now he's pandering to Hispanics, the ones that he says are the illegals that are going to vote for Biden. Now he's trying to pander to them. Like, he's just desperate. I'm like, where are his campaign people? Where are the ones who do damage control? But it could be that they exist. He's just not listening to them. I'm pretty sure people are giving him advice. Mr. President, this is what's happening right now. This is what we need to do to, you know, save face, to regain the faith and trust of your loyal voters, and he might be like, no, I'm going to do it my own way. I'm like, Mr. President, please. Like, so I don't know. It's just going to be very interesting what happens with this election. But as the time gets closer, you know, we see that it's really serious now. And before coronavirus and before George Floyd and the other incidences that happened, I would have never thought Biden stood a chance at winning the election. But I think he has a really good shot. And I think that whoever he picks as his VP will be the thing to put him over the edge. Now, because he's already declared it'll be a woman of color, she has to be a woman of color. I mean, that's what he said. If he doesn't pick one, then it's kind of like, you lied about who you're going to choose for your VP. Why should I elect you? But he has to pick someone. And I don't know. Biden isn't a progressive. That's not a secret. Biden is old school conservative Democrat. He's not with this whole, you know, left, far left, just, you know, Gen Z, young millennial type thing. He's not with it. And I kind of feel like to get millennial voters and Gen Z voters, I shouldn't say I'm a millennial, so I shouldn't say all, I'm saying younger millennials, because older millennials, you know, we can't say the word socialism with a straight face, advocating for a socialist or communist government with a straight face, because we learned better. But the younger millennials and the Gen Zers, he would, to get their vote, he would have to get a progressive woman, you know, somebody that's more on their side, on kind of what they want when it comes to what they want the Democratic Party to look like. But at the same time, there's more older millennials, Gen X, baby boomers, even the silent generation, there's more of them that are going to be able to vote than it is Gen Z. So I really hope he doesn't make that mistake of trying to do that. Because, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of young people in this country that can vote, but there's more older people. You have three other generations. Well, three and a half, I guess, technically, other generations that are eligible to vote. So I feel like if he gets a progressive candidate, it's going to turn off all the other people. So it's like, yeah, he might get the Gen Z young millennials to vote for him, but the people that would put him over the edge to win won't vote for him. So I feel like he has to pick a woman of color, because he said he would, but she has to be someone that is not too far left, not too far right, maybe a little more left than him, because he's pretty centrist. He, you know, he's trying to embrace these progressive ideas, and it's like, really, Biden, you're not fooling anyone. But I think that should be his strategy. He needs to figure out, I know he wants the vote. I mean, as a candidate, you want everybody to vote for you, but you have to be realistic. Is it worth it to get this small percentage of Gen Z, younger millennial voters to vote for you, or the other three and a half generations that exist that could vote for you? So, I don't know, but we'll see. I mean, it's going to be an interesting race. It's interesting now as it is, but it'll be even more interesting when he finally announces his VP. Because I have a feeling that that's going to really push him over the edge. Because people are like, you know, it's kind of sad because the past two elections, at least, this one in 2016, people feel like they're choosing the lesser of the evils. People hated Hillary Clinton. People hated Donald Trump. People hate Donald Trump. People hate Joe Biden. And it's like, when can we get a candidate that everybody loves? You know, now people hated Obama, too. And, you know, with the whole Mitt Romney thing, I feel like if Mitt Romney hadn't had Paul Ryan, he would have won. Because the election was close. But I feel like if he hadn't had Paul Ryan, he would have won. Because Paul Ryan was creepy, first of all. Very, very conservative. Like, conservative to a fault. Like, it was just bad. And I know that he picked him because he is a Mormon. And people, you know, how JFK, being the first Catholic, the only Catholic, I think, elected, people questioned his religious beliefs because he was Catholic. Just like Mitt Romney, because he's Mormon. I'm like, don't they believe in the same God as you? I mean, they're Christians. They're denominations of Christianity. Anyway, that I'm pretty sure that's why he chose Paul Ryan, because he was a conservative Christian, and he was somebody that the Republicans could get behind. But I feel like it was his downfall because he was a conservative Christian. So I feel like if he hadn't chose Paul Ryan, that he would have won. So, I mean, I don't know, but and that's why Trump chose Mike Pence, because he's a conservative Christian, Republican, that Trump was not. He's already had the backs of the Republican Congress people, you know, in the country, and people know who he is and what he stands for, that kind of thing. That Trump needed that balance. That's why he chose Mike Pence. So with Biden, we will see how that goes. I don't know. But, oh, wow. I've been talking for an hour and 9 minutes. So I think that I got everything out that I wanted to talk about. A lot of it is, of course, if you listen to the entire thing, bless your heart. A lot of it is rambling, but I mean, that's what a podcast is for, right? Just to ramble and hope people listen. And if people don't, you're just talking to yourself, and that's okay too. So it might be a minute before I update again, because I mean, I don't know. If there's something like really intriguing that happens, I might be like, hey, let me get on and say something. But it might be a while again, and it might be another hour and 10 minute podcast. I don't know. But so that's all I have for right now. As always, if you are on Twitter, you can follow me. My handle is AK17033. Again, that is AK17033. And if you have any comments or suggestions, or you want to fact check me, because I was really lazy when it comes to fact checking this one. I didn't really sit down and do a whole lot of research. It was basically what I read, what I remembered. And some of it's my opinion. So if you want to throw that out at me, where are your receipts or whatever, I can get them for you. You can give them to me. It's fine. If you have any other topics you want me to cover, any questions, you know, as usual, just anything, throw suggestions at me, you know, talk to me on Twitter. And all that good stuff. So thank you all for listening, and I will talk to you next time.